About Last Night is a podcast series that I have wanted to record for ages. Each episode, I talk to someone who excels in their field about the highs and lows of their creative journey and how and where they find joy in their lives. Some people have asked me about the name, Why About Last Night? Simply because I meet my guests at the end of the day and we chat over a drink or two. So if you know anything about me, you will know I adore being immersed in any kind of creative project. But at the core of everything I do, I am a singer-songwriter first. And through my years as a professional singer, I have met many, many wonderful musicians and feel really blessed that I have. Which leads me to this episode's guest, Ollie Rockberger. Ollie is a writer-producer, keys player, and singer-songwriter. Ollie has worked with a staggering number of incredible musicians, Steve Gadd, Randy Brecker, and John Mayer, to name a few. Notably also Laura Muvala, whom we chat about. I met Ollie at the very lively Horseshoe Pub in Hampstead, North London, on a gorgeous summer's day. Ollie and I ended up chatting for nearly 2 hours. I lost all track of time, totally engrossed in Ollie's experiences and viewpoint on the world of music and his part in it. Here's our conversation. Ollie, I'm so delighted that you're doing this. I want to start really with the most obvious question. So how did you get into the music industry? Because you are a singer, songwriter, producer, keys player, just anything else? Have I missed out anything else?
That's it. That's pretty much it.
It's a really long title.
It's probably trying to abbreviate that.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Acronym of some description.
Exactly.
Now, tell us about the beginning, how you started, and...
Yeah, so there's sort of almost two separate things, I think. There's the kind of getting into music, and then getting into the industry.
Yeah,
and we
absolutely.
We can sort of talk about both of those things.
Cool.
And that's kind of each... have their own sort of overlapping journey, I think. But in terms of music part of it,
yes.
When I was 3 or 4, I very naturally gravitated to the piano, which is one of those things that I just would go and play and improvise and make up melodies.
Wow, at 3 and 4?
Yeah, it was just, I had a very natural affinity for music.
Yes.
And I played by ear and I made things that I had no interest in reading music or learning music in a formal way.
Okay.
And my parents had an amazing record collection, you know, like Anita Baker, Jimmy Smith, Oscar Peterson, The Crusaders, Randy Crawford, all of that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of listening to music and then trying to play along and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then I found one great teacher when I was 7 or 8 years old and did a lot of improvising with her.
Oh, brilliant. Which is unusual at that age.
We found somebody. My mum was amazing and she found a lot of, you know, she was really kind of proactive in trying to find the right...
For you?
For me. For someone who had some talent and passion for it that wasn't a classic. You know, it's very easy. In the UK, and music education has changed a lot, but back in the day, classical music education is very strong here, but education in more contemporary music, jazz, pop, it's harder to find people that can teach that in a more structured way.
Totally. So how wonderful for you that your mum could kind of see out of the box.
She was the person that saw something in me in terms of talent before anyone else did. She was like, I know he has something.
She's your mum.
And I'm going to try. Yeah.
Mm.
But I think even when people would say, well, he's just sort of banging away, and she was, no, I can hear there's something there. And I think she was right.
Yeah, so no, it's amazing. Well, of course.
Well, she ended up, we found somebody to teach me in a more sort of jazz-centric way from the age of 11.
Yeah.
And I stayed with him all the way up until I was fortunate enough to get a full scholarship to Berklee when I was 17.
Amazing, yeah.
And so I stayed with this guy called Leon Cohen, I stayed with him all the way up till then, and I was very lucky that my music, the school that I went to, King Alfred School in London, had an amazing music department, a lot of bands and competitions, it was a thriving music department.
Yeah.
So by the time I went to Berklee, I kind of had quite a rich education.
Yeah.
But then making that step from being somebody who's known in his school and in his smaller community.
Totally.
To then stepping up where everyone is a star of their own communities and seeing what the level is and students from all over the world was an incredible eye-opener for me and very inspiring, and that kind of leads to the more industry.
Getting into the industry.
Yeah.
So really, I think what you're saying is
you were immersed. I mean, a lot of people would cite their family upbringing as the sort of core thread that kind of brings you to your creative passion. Yeah. I mean, I, certainly the same for me. Music was in the house. So alongside that, your mum really saw something in you. So the love for music was never in question, really.
I think it was just it just was in me from very young. And it's a very mysterious thing why it graces some people and others. And then obviously it's a lifelong journey to work at it and get better and
totally.
Find a place inside it and hone it and craft it. But in terms of that natural spark
of essence
of passion and also aptitude, frankly.
Totally.
It's like you just can't understand why or where you got it from.
No.
But you can see in the youngster when they have that.
But I think what's really lovely is that talent, that essence, that spark. It's almost, I feel, I was talking to a friend the other day who's a fashion designer, and we were talking about the creativity just being like a fire inside you. You can't ignore it.
Yeah.
And so lots of people do have that. I think what's wonderful about your career, and I'm hoping you'll tell us a little bit more, is the discipline that goes hand in hand with the creativity. It's not like someone can just play the piano.
Yeah.
You know, because you've got to, as you say, hone your craft, and it is a craft.
Yeah.
And also for you, probably getting to Berkeley, you saw that everybody was amazing, incredible, inspiring, you know, creative to the nth degree.
Yeah.
And if you, presumably by then you'd chosen, or maybe it wasn't even choosing this as a career path because it was so obvious. Was it like
that's
that for
really,
you?
That's a really good question. I think that around the time of A-levels was actually the time when I, obviously that's a time in one's life, particularly if you have some academic ability. I wasn't like, you know, Einstein, but I also wasn't, you know, I had some ability and there's all different paths that I could have taken, right? Whatever that may have been.
I was looking forward to the like juxtaposition of Einstein. Who were you going
I
for?
I actually sort of freaked out when I was about to see that. But I kind of, you know, there would have been a part for me that wouldn't have been music, you know, in some way. And I think that when I was doing my A-levels and I was having to spend other time away from music, studying and doing other things, I was like, I realised that all I wanted to be doing was working at music.
Yes.
Composing, working at it. And then that grew. But once I got to Berkeley, one of the challenges for me was understanding how to work in music and in what areas I would work at music.
Yes.
So if that makes sense, sort of like, you know, when I first got there, having a more like, you know, sort of feeling that I want to get my jazz playing and my instrumental ability to a certain level.
Yeah.
And then looking around and seeing guys and girls there who were phenomenal at the more straight ahead side of things and realizing that wasn't really my passion, but actually songwriting or studio recording as a consummate session guy and those kind of players, and suddenly realizing that the songwriting producer, studio keys guy and singer-songwriter guy, whatever that guy is.
That's what excited you.
That's what excited me, and then to figure out how to work at that.
Yes.
So then that was a whole kind of journey, has been a whole journey in itself, which took on a particular form at Berkeley and then has morphed and developed and changed as I got older.
Yes.
And since I graduated, I think music at college for me, it's a lot of harvesting.
Yes.
You know, you're kind of getting a lot of information.
Absolutely.
And then there's a sort of process of trying to learn how to organise it and how to like harness it in the ways that are going to be relevant to what I actually want to do as a musician or an artist or a freelancer.
Totally.
Where do I bring value? Where do I bring something that's really personal to me that no one else can bring?
Absolutely.
What is special about what I do?
Yes.
But it's harder to sort of know that when you're 23 or 24.
Totally.
I think. And some people do.
No, I agree. But I think you can know, but it still, it kind of beds down year on year.
The universe
kind of
tells you a little bit.
The universe always, no, I agree.
But it's kind of like, I think, you know, it's like the more work you do, you start to see the people that you gravitate towards, that gravitate towards you, the kind of work you get called for.
And you've worked with some amazing people.
I've been very fortunate.
Yeah.
I've worked with some, you know.
Do you want to tell us some of the incredible people you've worked with?
Yeah, I think, you know, when I first went to the States, and
you stayed in the States after you graduated?
Yeah, so I lived in America for 16 years. I lived in Boston for 6 years, which kind of covered me through Berkeley.
Yes.
And then I moved to New York, and I was in New York for 10 years. And when I moved to America, and specifically when I moved to New York, I kind of, I had an idea and a fantastical part of my childhood imagination that I would get to work with certain kinds of people.
Okay.
Heroes or people like you, you know, and I was very happy that my time in New York led to the chance to work with a lot of people that I really love, you know, like Carly Simon,
yes.
John Mayer, yes. Jesse Harris, and some people in the jazz world like Randy Brecker, Will Lee, Nathan Lee, Steve Gadd.
Yeah, Steve Gadd was really.
That was the heaviest one for me.
Yeah, I was.
That was the deepest one.
I have to say, when I was reading some stuff up about you before we met the first time, and I saw Steve Gadd, and I was like, it took a while for my brain to compute as well.
I went away with Steve Gadd as part of Will Lee's project, and we went to the Cotton Club in Japan. We did 1 week in 2013, and then we did another week in 2014. And I think working with Gadd was probably the most, had the biggest effect on my musical life, and the way I thought about playing in the rhythm section and working. And just, I had a chance to work with musicians of the old school. Like, I was part of Randy Brecker's band.
That must have been incredible.
Yeah, and that led to me meeting Chuck Loeb, who passed away last year, which was incredibly sad. He was a mentor to me, and I played in Chuck's band at one point, and that led to the Nathan Easts and all of these kind of people of that world.
Yes.
George and I worked with as well. And I think for me, working with guys of that generation gave me a kind of feeling of like seeing how they conduct themselves on the road in studios, how they talk to people.
Yeah.
The ethic, the ethos.
Yes, yes.
And that's something that I've, it's interesting now, you know, I'm 38 and I'm doing gigs where I'm in a transition where I'm moving from being the youngest person in the gigs to being sometimes in the middle of the older people.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think having been on those gigs or those sessions with those guys where I was a youngster watching them has given me a different kind of feeling in terms of trying to keep that with me in terms of how I handle myself with the younger ones, or when I'm in a studio situation and trying to go on the road and see how they handle conflict and how they, and also to be honest on the other side, what the expectation was, you know, to how you come prepared for something, the
Absolutely.
Level of work and detail, like Scad, Randy Brecker, these guys, they don't mess around.
No.
And being in New York at the time when they were there, it's a feeling of like I come to a session knowing the music better than the artist
knows it. Absolutely.
From all angles. But then the flip side of that is trying to wear that in a light way.
Yeah.
So it's like you have it all, the information, the different ways you can go, but try to have a lightness of touch about it.
Yeah,
so
that totally
you're not
agree.
Intimidating or being
totally
I am
agree.
The big knowing everything.
Yeah, totally.
And that's
agree.
What I found from those guys. And that's what I try and do. If I'd learn anything from them, I hope it was that. Right, one of the things that I felt from working with Gadd and Will Lee, like whilst they are to you and to me they are stars, when Gadd steps in a room with Kay Bush
yes.
or Will Lee with like Barry Manilow or whoever hundreds of people he's worked with, these are the ultimate servants to other people.
Yes.
In the instrumental world, to musicians like us, these are stars.
Totally.
But they become stars because they are masters at being servants to the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And they step into a room and Gadd's like, if you want me to, you know, he'll play the most simple, beautiful thing that is right for the music.
Yeah, yeah.
And nothing more.
Yeah. Normally I ask people at this point, you know, how does your industry bring you joy? But it's kind of written all over your face, and I think it's, you know, it's coursing through your veins and it's your religion and everything all wrapped up into one. So I want to ask you a slightly different question, because it is your job, it's your life. When life gets challenging, because even, you know, life is never smooth for everybody, are there times when you lose sight of the joy, and how do you tune into the joy? You know, say you're working on a project and people are not being as straightforward as they could be being, or some sort of musical project is not coming to you as easily. I'm sure that when you compose, not everything is like this. I'll be really frustrated if it is. It all falls into place. When life is a bit kind of more on the down or the challenging side, how do you tune into that joy? How do you go, oh yeah, do you know, this is something I love, so this is what I need to focus on?
Yeah, I think one immediate answer to that is, particularly when conflicts and difficulties come up in one's work, like let's say as a sideman or working with other people, and even if there isn't conflict per se. You can get burnt out, yes, say, by giving a lot of yourself to other things.
Yes.
My remedy for that has always been having one's own project, having one's own music as, yes, well, can be like a sanctuary. So for me, like, you know, in amongst all the other things that I do with other people, and, you know, every time I work with somebody else, you could argue I have a different boss, or I'm a co-boss each time.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
But then actually knowing in my mind that I can go back to my music and close the door and work on my own music, and it's up to me, and I'm the boss of that music, and it's the truest expression of who I am.
Yes.
Means that I can then have a pure heart when I serve them, yes, with their music, because, yeah, I'm not... What I think can often happen with sidemen is that who don't have their own music project, that, yeah, solo thing, is that sometimes you end up putting that energy into the side person projects that you do, and, yeah, it can, yeah, sometimes contaminate them a little bit.
Okay,
so
interesting.
So for me, partly, one answer to that question, I think, for me is making sure I feel the most fulfilled when I have a balance of my own work in progress as Ollie, like my own output,
yeah, 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 yeah,
in addition to working with other people. And I take real pride in, like, when I'm working with other people trying to help them realise their vision as much as possible and find that sweet spot between what I bring to the table as a individual musician,
yeah,
and,
yeah,
what they need, and finding that place where,
yeah,
that meets.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's something that keeps me sane, is it's like having my own thing going on. But then the separate part of that is, well, what do I do if my own thing isn't going on?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to... Yeah, well, because the thing is, I think sometimes if I'm working on something and I get very bogged down, I have to step away from it.
Yeah.
So it's so interesting to me that you go, well, actually, when the music gets challenging, I'll just do a different kind of music that's my own.
Yeah, I think that's part of it, but I also think that within my own music making, I think that point that you make about you need to find ways to step away from your own music and take breathers from it, because when you're writing something or working on something, I find sometimes when you first sit down to work on it, you're in the clearest headspace, your
totally,
ears are fresh,
yeah,
and the more you work on it, the deeper and the more micro you get, and the,
yeah,
closer you get to it is. And
well,
actually,
I lose all objectivity.
But I think for me, what I find is that when I, and it certainly applies to like mixing something or like when you're recording, it's like when you step away from it after a day and come back with fresh ears and know when that time has come.
Yes.
And I think with experience, you get more sense of that. But when you then come back to it, you then get a chance to regenerate and hear it fresh again.
Yes.
And it's amazing that I'm, oh, well, obviously I need to change X, I need,
yeah,
to change,
yeah,
Y.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
So I think that, but also stepping away sometimes creatively, stepping away for a couple of days or listening to some music or making a playlist, I think sometimes for me it can also be about knowing the kind of project I'm making. So let's say I'm going to make a particular kind of recording of 3 or 4 songs. I'm going to try and write almost to a brief of this kind of colour.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just, that's going to help.
Oh, I love that you said colour.
Yeah, it's going to help.
Yeah.
It's going to help focus what I'm doing, and understand that then there'll be an opportunity to do more work outside of that. Sometimes we forget that actually what we're doing in the moment doesn't have to represent everything we're going to do. There'll be more chances to do more stuff.
Absolutely.
And that's hard to remember, isn't it?
Yeah, no, totally. When you're in something, it's, yeah, impossible to remember at times. How do you deal with the obsessive nature of being a creative? I mean, you strike me as being quite well balanced, actually. I don't think you're one of these people that just kind of locks the room and stays in there for hours and hours, or do you? But because I think that any creative industry, the beauty of it is it's not prescriptive. We don't need boundaries. We can lose hours. I'm,
yeah,
sure you're the same. You,
yeah,
know, if you sit down at the piano, I find when I'm,
yeah,
singing, I could lose hours.
Yeah, 100%.
But how do you... Yeah, how do you deal with that obsessiveness? Because you've got lots to do. You've got a professional life to juggle, a personal life to juggle,
yeah,
you know, lots of things going on.
Yeah.
Do you have to go, hang on a minute, I need to step back again and find my joy, find happiness? Or do you actually really immerse yourself in that and it's always a positive?
My feeling has been, as I've gone, I don't know, as I've grown a little older and been doing it for longer, I've found that I've been able to be better at finding joy in doing it. I think when I was younger, I was a lot more I was prone to a lot more stress about my work and, you know, where I was relative to other people, where I was relative to my expectation of myself in terms of where I should be at X or Y point.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that as one gets older, I think we learn what our strengths are and weaknesses are creatively, what our interests are, and then making sure to focus on those things. And frankly, I want to get lost in what I'm doing. I
yeah.
want to be consumed by it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't, for me, it's not, I realized early on it wasn't going to be practicing piano, pure piano for like 7-8 hours a day and transcribing. I've done some of that, but not taking it to a level where I'm just practicing solos and on an instrumental level for 8-9 hours.
Yeah, yeah.
I realised that for me, I could get lost in writing songs and production and collaborations.
Yeah.
And I want to be part of projects that make me want to immerse myself in that.
Yeah.
And forget space and time a little bit.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah.
But I think part of that is also getting to a point where you, and this may be a separate part of the chat, is figuring out, getting better at figuring out what are the right collaborations and what are the right projects to take on, who should I work with and how does that happen?
Totally. When I work with people, I think for me that's the biggest thing. I have to feel something. It's that intangible thread of emotion and feeling.
But I think it does come down to that. It's very simple.
I think you know, it's like whatever level we're at in our careers and musically, like, it does come down to, at the end of the day, can I move people with what I do? Can I move myself with what I do?
Totally.
And can I move other people? And frankly, that's all that it really comes down to.
Yeah.
Can I make people feel something, and can I communicate something? Can I tell a story? Can I work with other people? Can I translate my vision to an audience? Can I translate my vision to other musicians on the bandstand?
Yeah.
Can I get the best out of them?
Yeah.
Can they get the best out of me?
Yeah.
Those are the things that I think all of us are basically trying to grapple with.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you come back from New York, and how long have you been here? Was it difficult to kind of then sort of assimilate yourself into the London music scene? How did the British music scene differ from your experiences in New York?
I think the way that I kind of look at it is I feel like, I don't know whether this is going to sound pretentious or grandiose, but it's the way that I look at it, and it's what's helped me. I believe that I'm on the international music scene, and I happen to live in London.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have a network of musicians in the States, and I have a network of musicians in London, and I think that that's the way that I feel about it. And for me, the part that's been a process has been I had and have a very strong collegiate network of musicians in New York. I had the seeds of that in the UK, but obviously wanting to have a musical, I believe, I'm a firm believer that a musical family is pivotal to a healthy career success, but also a healthy sort of soul, like spiritually pursuing
your
music. And I think that for me, I was very fortunate that the gig with Laura and Vula, and we could talk a bit about that.
Yeah, that was incredible.
Incredible.
And hang on, I remember this correctly? Did you got that job without me? Like, it was sight unseen, wasn't it? It was, that's crazy.
Yeah, so
that's crazy, but incredible.
Yeah, so what happened?
Massive smile on his face right now, by
the way. Yeah, so the gig with her gave me a running start in my move.
Totally.
In terms of that network and some sort of credibility with musicians here that perhaps weren't familiar with work that I'd done already. But I think that the Laura gig was a really interesting one for me, because I was a fan of Laura's, legitimately a fan, and I went to a few gigs of hers when they'd come to the States. My dear friend Croy Miller is her longtime producer and drummer and musical director.
Okay.
Croy and I had worked together in the UK for time, like, since, you know, a long time.
Yeah,
when he
yeah.
was coming up and I was coming up. And I'd started to put the word out that I was gonna move from New York. It'd been a process for me for a number of reasons, and I'd reached a decision at the beginning of December 2016, January, and I told Troy, in amongst my network of people that I'd let know, and Troy said, you know, it's really interesting you are moving, because Laura, we're looking for a keys player vocalist for Laura's project to do the album cycle for the Dreaming Room, which is about to come out.
Oh.
Would you be up for it? And
I was incredibly up for it, kind of creative, musical, but I was afraid because I was moving. I would have to join the band in March, start heavy rehearsing and gigs, you know, but then not be moving fully until July of that year.
Right.
So it was going to be like, I was quite concerned about the logistics, but it was kind of like, you either
hell yes.
take it now yeah. or you don't. And so yeah. I found a way to just take that leap.
Yeah.
And thank God I did.
That's yeah. amazing, yeah.
And it was, I think, probably the steepest learning in my professional career, because a pop gig, you know, where on
again, a very different discipline.
Yeah, where you're on in-ears and you're on clip tracks, and every gig, like our third gig was Jules Holland, we played Glastonbury yeah, yeah. main stage. Like every gig is really important.
Yeah, yeah.
You want to be there. You know, I was 2 weeks behind the others, so I was trying to. It's very complex music, Laura's music, deceptively complex, and I was trying to get off the music as quickly as I could and
yeah,
really
yeah.
internalize
yeah,
it.
Yeah, totally.
And then the muscle memory of like the two synths and knowing the patches. It was a lot to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, fortunately, it has worked out thus far, and it's been great. And I'm still part of her project, and it's been an incredible education for me, also creatively. You know, working with such a trailblazing innovator
oh,
as her.
Oh, she's
a,
yeah, she's
and her
incredible.
Music as a composer, I think that I've absorbed a lot, and it's been very inspiring.
Interesting,
for me.
But I think that must bring you such immense joy, being stimulated in that way and being part of something that is, as you said, she's so ahead of the curve in so
yeah.
many ways.
It brought me so, it brought me and it brings me so much joy, and for a number of reasons. I think you talk to any musician who does side man work, and they'll probably tell you that it's hard to find a gig which is many things at once, including things like being musically stimulating, spiritually stimulating.
Yes.
And also has credibility.
Yes.
And her gig has all of those things, and it's very hard to find things that have all of those things and that you also feel is a good fit.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
from a
for
of,
you.
For you,
yeah.
from a musical kind of kin. Like, I felt like when her and I first got in a room together, it became apparent in the first week that there was something, you know, kindred, that, or it had the potential to be kindred. You know, one needs to work at these things.
Well,
but
maybe,
I felt like there was the spark of something where I was like, I can support you, and I can help you, and you can understand that I have your back, and
yeah,
you can
yeah.
trust me, and that sort of thing.
Well, maybe that is, you know, going back to your earlier comment of the universe. You know, the universe, I think whatever happens in our lives, the
yeah.
universe never steers us wrong.
Yeah.
There's always a reason.
Yeah.
There's always a reason.
Yeah.
Would you say that that was... I mean, look, we've mentioned some incredible people.
Yeah.
Would you say that's like the high of your career to date, or what would you say the highs were of your creative journey so far?
It's certainly one of them.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it's hard to pick any one, because there are things that come along the way that when you look back, there are things that you realize are informative things.
Totally.
But I think that the gig with Laura was important to me on so many levels. I think one of the levels was the fact that I was making a life change.
Yes.
And it coincided with a life change, and it facilitated a life change.
Yes.
And it facilitated a network, musical growth, a new circle of friends, and like it did so much for me. And confidence in terms of doing these really big gigs under pressure, and I think, you know, my experience of even the work that I've done with Randy Bracker and Will Lee and singer songwriters, I've done quite a lot of recording sessions
yes.
now, and we're very fortunate on that. I feel like I'm lucky that I've actually been able to have a real experience of recording with a lot of different people.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, gosh.
But what
yes.
I was going to build to is that the Laura experience was a very different kind of pressure. Like, all of those things have pressure, but that kind of, like, the things about the pop nature of the gig and the sort of always on TV or on radio, and then it's like thousands of people watching, and then it's like, you know, wanting to be there for her. And I think it just had its own pressures that I hadn't quite experienced on that level.
Do you
and you
find,
want to know that you can do it.
Yeah, no, totally. And also, I think from my dabbling on the pop side of things, there's an exacting nature
yes.
to pop music
yes.
that is just not there in jazz. I think, and maybe you could tell me whether I'm right or wrong, I think a pop gig of that nature, the precision of, you know, the way the arrangement sits is totally different.
It is. I think that I'd set a couple of things. I think there's a wave of music now, and Laura is at the forefront of this. And there's a few other examples. I'd say Becca Stevens is another example, someone that I've worked with a fair bit, of music that I would almost describe as having chamber music-esque qualities. It's like chamber pop jazz.
Yes, yeah.
Which means that there's a specificity in the way it's put together.
Yeah.
And I had a goal which was basically to honour the parts which were sacrosanct.
Yes.
Know? But also for me to create in tandem with that my own parts.
Oh, interesting.
That would augment and complement that, but would also become over time
part of it. Yeah.
And that's really what I wanted to achieve with Laura, and that's frankly what I want to achieve on most gigs.
Well,
that
I was going to say,
Sideman.
I think you have just encapsulated your creative journey beautifully by saying that you respect the discipline and what's put in front of you, but you want to give it your own imprint.
Because there's a reason.
Imprint.
Yes, because the thing is, it's a delicate balance, because at the same time, it's like, there's a reason why someone calls you, and sometimes they don't totally know the reason why they've called
totally.
You.
Totally.
Because if they wanted it to be totally exactly like the record, or exactly like, then you could put it on track or get a robot to do it. But I think the other thing that I've learned from over the time, and the different gigs I've done with different people I've done, is every gig, there is a window in terms of flexibility, improvisation, and creativity.
Yes.
But every gig, I said the word window, and what I meant was to say ceiling. There's a ceiling, and every gig has a different, the roof is placed at a different place.
Yes, okay, interesting.
And every gig, you want to kind of figure out like what's an appropriate amount, an appropriate and complementary way to bring yourself to the music and to stretch out. So for example, on Laura's gig, I feel that at this point, I have a sense of the moments and the ways in which I may improvise and bring something that's not prescribed. I think I figured out on that gig, and it's obviously an evolving process, but
totally.
I figured out like where that line is on her gig.
Yeah.
And on another gig, that line's in a different place.
Yeah, totally.
But it takes time, and my feeling is that in my Sideman work is that you go into every situation erring more on the side of caution, and it's almost like a faucet that as you get more established, and after you've shown the person that you can respect the prescribed things, you gradually let the air out a bit, and then I'm going to like add a little more. And there have been some lovely moments with Laura where there'll be a moment where I've added some things, and then maybe there's one rehearsal, maybe I try something. I remember once or twice, it may have only happened once actually. I remember like that, her looking at me, I did something, and I said to her, and I laughed, I said, too much? And she's like, I was like, this, I did a kind of like a not so much, like, and we laughed about it because okay, so it's good sometimes to
Push that envelope a little bit.
Because then people can see what you're capable of doing. And
totally.
Then as long as you're okay to them, say, okay, well, that's too much for this situation. And I always respect someone that knows what they want. And then it's up to me to find the right translation of what it is.
Absolutely.
That they want.
What about as an artist yourself?
Yeah.
I mean, that's obviously really important to you, and you've brought out some gorgeous music.
Thank you.
Would you say that's as important? You know, some people put their session work, you know, their session works at the forefront, and then where does it sit? And what kind of hopes and dreams do you have for your own stuff? You know, as an artist in your own right.
Yeah, my feeling about it has evolved and changed over the years. I've gone on quite a journey with regard to like where my solo work fits in the scheme of things.
Okay,
I think the older I get, the more I feel like I want to amass a body of work, and then I want to basically leave behind a legacy of really high quality work.
Okay.
My stuff, co-writes, production, writing, straight session playing, it doesn't matter. It's
part of you.
It's all good, and it's all part of one continuous motion of like wanting to leave behind something that will speak about, I make a little imprint here. And
yeah,
that's
yeah.
what that is for me. So I think that when I was in my 20s, I had more of a feeling. It's funny how sometimes you want something that isn't necessarily totally aligned to who you actually are. You know, I was coming up in my solo stuff at the time with like Jamie Callum and Katie Melua and all of the jazz pop people.
Yes.
And I think I had a feeling at that time like I could be one of those guys and I want to be touring and be big with my own thing in that way.
Yeah.
But the reality is that I was never really totally suited
to that kind of pressure and touring under my own name.
Okay.
It took me a while
to work that out.
I came quite close to signing to Blue Note when I was 30, and I was making a record, Old Habits, and I had this interesting moment when that disintegrated. Rather than somebody who really wants that, probably at that time would go and say, I'm going to knock down every other door, and if they don't want it, somebody else will. And my reaction was different. My reaction was, okay, well, I'm going to put out Old Habits on my own steam, and I'm going to focus on sideman work and co-writing, and I'm going to keep putting out music, and I kept doing gigs under my own name. I did Love Supreme, London Jazz. I did some cool stuff.
So
but it was interesting. I had a feeling like, actually, that's not totally what I want. And now, that was when I was 30, I'm 38 now, and I think I arrive over the last 8 years, I come to a feeling of like, actually,
this is who I am.
Yeah, and part of that is I love output. I love making music, recording music, having a body of work, but I will always put music out. I'm as passionate about producing,
all those other things.
All those other things.
I think it's interesting, actually, because that could have been, as you say, a low, and maybe it was at the time.
For a minute it was, but
sounds like it was like a subtle epiphany.
It was.
Yeah, so there have been lows, but as you say, and I think that's the fabric of a life of a creative, really, isn't it? I mean,
there will be more. So right now I'm really focusing on a few things. I'm really working on writing and producing other people. So I've got a few projects at the moment. I've done some co-writing with a great artist called Georgia McKay.
Okay.
Fantastic. I'll be doing some writing. I've done some writing for his album, doing some playing with him on that as well. It's a young guy called James Rose, but his actual artist name is Terrain.
Okay.
He's an electronic artist.
Oh.
I'm doing some co-production and co-writing on his new record. I've done some work with China Moses, who's a great vocalist, singer.
Yes.
Songwriter. For her new record, I'm releasing a new EP of my own called Terra Firma, which is kind of myself produced, a bit more experimental than some of my other stuff.
Fantastic.
To be released later this year. I'm still gigging with Laura. So it's kind of like.
So you're not doing very much then?
Just sort of sitting
out. You're just hanging out.
Yeah, it's good. But a real sort of what I've been doing, but then a real extra focus on the writing production side. Where my heart is.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Throughout this time we've spent together, every time you talk about that, there's a different vibe in your voice. It's really interesting. It's a very subtle thing, but it's clearly that's the core. Do you know, I could sit here and talk to you all evening, without doubt. Ollie, what I want to know from you before we round off is, could you define joy in three words?
Three words to define joy for me.
Yes.
Create, collaborate, passion.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much, Ollie.
My pleasure,
thank you. It's been such a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure for me.